Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Last December, the Trump administration said it would reduce the Bears Ears National Monument by a whopping 85%. Bears Ears is one of the most beautiful and treasured regions in the United States. The 1.3 million acre breathtaking expanse of Red Rock Canyons is in southern Utah. The announcement sparked an immediate reaction by Native American tribes, conservationists, and environmental organizations. They are suing the administration, saying the Antiquities Act does not give it the power to reduce national monuments. Native tribes, one of the major opponents of the Trump decision, has long-standing ties to Bears Ears. The region includes more than 100,000 Native American archaeological and cultural sites, considered sacred by many tribes. The New York Times reports that as early as last March, an aide to Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah asked a senior Interior Department official to consider shrinking Bears Ears in the southeastern corner of the state. It also reports that the Department of Interior was focused on the potential for oil and gas exploration at the protected Utah site. This is according to internal agency documents. On today's One Planet series, we are spending the hour talking about the administration's plans to privatize public lands. What is being done to make sure these public treasures stay in the public domain? Today, we're joined by Alastair Lee Bitsui, the communications coordinator for Utah Dene Bika, which means people's sacred lands in the Navajo language. Utah Dene Bikaya is a nonprofit grassroots Native American organization working to heal people and the earth, and it supports tribes in collaboratively managing Bears Ears. And Alastair joins us from the studios of KUER in Salt Lake City. Hi, Alastair. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Alastair.
Hi, Alastair.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined today by Hans Cole, Director of Campaigns and Advocacy for Patagonia, one of the plaintiffs against the repeal of the Bears Ears Monument. And Hans Cole joins us from Ventura, California. Hi, Hans. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Alastair, I want to start with you. Before diving in and talking about the details of this and the implications, can you give our audience a quick visual of this breathtaking place? I'm sure some people have been there, many have not. And we were just looking at photos last night and were completely mesmerized by the sheer beauty of Bears Ears. Tell us, what does it look like? What is it like to be there?
Thank you. It's Bears Ears, also known in Navajo, is called Shashja, because of the Bears Ears buttes that you can see from very far distances. Yesterday on my drive back, I was back on Navajo, and it's a 7-hour drive from where I'm from in New Mexico to Salt Lake City. So when I was driving by Monticello, Utah, which is a huge peak, the Abajo Mountains, and that's a mountain range there that also is connected to the Bears Ears region, and I can see like the Bears Ears buttes from afar, from a western horizon, and it's just a beautiful landscape. Like, it's from where I was driving towards Salt Lake City, you can see the plateau region of the area, but like, it's kind of deceiving too, because from afar you really cannot, you can't see what's behind a plateau, but it's not until you get into the region, into the mesas, that you see all kinds of different canyons, different landscapes, different plant life, different animal life, various diverse region of cultural resources that are very ancestral, but also sacred to Native American tribes of the region, which includes Navajo, Dene, Hopi, Zuni, Ute, Mountain Ute, and in the Ute. And it's just like, there's all kinds of different, from the San Juan River all the way down, which is like the one of the main arteries of the water sources that goes through Navajo territory, but also is considered a water source of the nearby Ute Mountain Tribe, and you can go from the banks of the San Juan all the way up to the Comb Ridge area, which is just like a majestic sand, like a basically a backbone of like cliffs that go up into the that connect to the Bears Ears region. And then there's also just lots of sandstone. I'm not a geologist, but it's just very diverse red canyons. Mm-hmm. Different, like I said, there's also forest land up there. There's cedar trees. There's all kinds of flora that exists. And I've been on an aerial flight with Bears Ears, so you can definitely see the view from an eagle, I guess you would say, and what that creature or animal sees from its perspective. And it's just a gorgeous landscape that I feel like has some magical powers, but also like spiritual significance, and there is life there.
We could spend an entire hour talking about what Bears Ears means to Native American tribes, but how would you summarize it? You know, a lot of people go there for hiking and biking, which is great, but talk a little bit about the spiritual significance of Bears Ears.
Well, like for me, at least from my personal connection, I felt like there's just like activity. It's just very healing, and that's what our mission is, Ute and Epikeia, and that falls in line with everything that exists there. There's ancestral Puebloan sites. There's also petroglyphs that are also connected to the tribes and the ceremonial connections that they each have. And there's just herbal medicines there, like green thread, herbal tea that grows in the region. That's medicinal. There's sage, there's juniper, which is used for home for people who want to build a hoanamaza, a hogan, or any ceremonial structure. Like, all those resources exist there. And so it's, in that sense, at least for Native Americans, it's highly, in addition to what other Americans use, like for hiking and climbing and more like ATVing or just camping, there's that element that is also there. And it's just like, you have to visit, like, it's undescribable. Like, you can't, like, I can't like describe it, but the only way I encourage all listeners is go check it out and see for yourself, and you'll have your own connection and your own story.
Yeah, and we've got some beautiful photos at yourcallradio.org. That is Alistair Lee Bitsui. He's with Utah Dene Bekea, which means people's sacred lands in the Navajo language. We're also joined by Hans Cole. He's with Patagonia. Hans, can you talk about the significance of Bears Ears and what it means to conservationists and environmentalists?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, I'd echo everything Alistair said about the place. You know, it is absolutely mind-blowingly beautiful, and, you know, you can tell that it's just a cultural landscape that has so much significance and importance to tribes. For our community, you know, at Patagonia, we obviously come from recreation angle. You know, we're a community, a company that was founded by climbers and surfers, you know, people who love to get outdoors and spend a lot of their time in places like this. And Bears Ears has some of the most incredible climbing on planet Earth. There's places like Indian Creek that are world-renowned. People come from literally all over the world to climb there, to experience the crack climbing on these incredible red rock, sort of sandstone cliffs. But there's also, you know, more adventurous places to get to, you know, out in that landscape throughout the entire region. So it's a really important place to people in our community, to climbers, but also to folks who don't climb, who get out there and just recreate with their families and experience the place. So it's absolutely deserving of as much protection as we can give it.
Alistair, Bears Ears was turned into a national monument by the Obama administration. Can you give us a little bit of background? How did that happen? And can you talk about the significance, the role that Native American tribes played in really pressuring the administration to turn Bears Ears into a national monument?
Well, like Han said, it is a ancestral homelands to the Native Americans, but also other American people come to visit the Bears Ears region for other reasons. But it's also, of course, just to maybe get a break from the dominant society and connect with Mother Earth. But another analogy that I like to use, and of course people, listeners probably can relate to it, is if they've seen Black Panther, I've kind of jokingly have stated that Bear's Ears is basically a Wakanda, and it's similar in that movie or that film, like five tribes are protecting that area, and it's the same thing with us, with Bear's Ears. There's five tribes united to protect this unique area. This there's lots of things that are connected. Each tribe holds sacred and ancestral, but of course on the surface you most people know that, but there's also deeper connections that haven't been revealed, and that's also important to protect as well. And for those reasons, I guess that's a good analogy, because it just makes sense to protect that area. And how UDB got involved was back in how it got the Obama administration to designate the area was just lots of planning, research, and a lot of consultation within the communities. The community, it is Native American led, it is locally driven, and it is through the data, through the knowledge, through the storytelling of the local people, of the Utah Navajos, or Utah Dene, and the Ute Mountain Ute, and the Zuni, and the Hopi. But it started there in Southern San Juan County, or San Juan County, which is part of Southern Utah. And that's where the whole proposal or push began. And it was really in 2010 that the spiritual and traditional leaders of the area formed Utah Dene Pekea. And they began by interviewing local elders to communicate like the Navajo people's cultural needs and their land stewardship values. And it was the initial proposal was through the Public Lands Initiative at the time, which was going through the legislative process. But at that point, all these different proposals were being considered, and they didn't, I guess, make it through. And it was in 2013 that Congressman Rob Bishop and Jason Chavez like entertained the Public Lands Initiative, and that's where the proposal through that Public Lands Initiative access, that's where the idea, I mean, it's not like an idea, but an organized idea, I guess, for a monument designation occurred. But I would want to disclaim that these tribes already had connections to the land. They already had always been up there wood hauling, harvesting wood, herbs, any medicinal plants, or even hunting. And so, like, they've already had that, like, that access already. But it was through the Public Lands Initiative that I would say basically resulted in the creation of UDB in response to protect the area. And it was in 2005 that the tribes, with Navajo leadership, had enlisted the involvement of other tribes in an effort to include all of them, all of the tribes who have ancestral connections, because it's just not Navajo. And it was in 2015 that the tribes formed the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition. And at the time, I was a Navajo Times reporter, so I did off and on write about Bears Ears issues. And then as a freelancer at that time, I was asked by nonprofits to assist them in this storytelling of the launch of the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition in 2015. That's where the tribes formally organized and ceremonially celebrated their proposal to submit to the Obama administration. And then after they officially announced, they were known as the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition. Utah Dene Pekea, which is a nonprofit, is just basically a sub-stakeholder that just guides them, mentors the tribes in like how to proceed, or use this, for instance, like Utah Dene Pekea would advocate and say like, okay, this is how we were able to capture Navajo data basically show to other tribes, like, this is how, what could work with you guys if you guys want this as an alternative to basically more basis for more protection and more basis for, like, obviously we have a connection. And so after that, after the tribes basically formed as a Bay Area Indian Tribal Coalition, they did lobbying. They met with, at the time, the Department of Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, and of course through engagement through her and other important Obama officials, they got to go to get the designation basically happening back in December of 2016, I believe.
I mean, this was a huge victory. I mean, under the Obama administration, they used the Antiquities Act to expand monuments by nearly 500 million acres. We're talking land and water. Hans, this was a major success by Native tribes. What was the significance when the Obama administration decided to ensure that Bears Ears would be a national monument?
Well, you know, I'd say it was nothing short of inspiring and historic. And, you know, I think while many other monuments, you know, have been made, I think this one was so unique in the leadership and vision of the intertribal coalition that Alistair was describing. And, you know, it's so powerful to see all the different groups coming together to protect a place like this for so many different reasons. And, you know, we've been inspired by the Intertribal Coalition and the tribe's work by Utah Dene Bekea. We've been inspired by our community, you know, getting fired up to want to protect this place. And I think, you know, it really speaks to how important protected wild places and public lands are to all people, to all of our people across the country. And, you know, this is an effort that's been going on for a long time, protecting wild places. You know, we really rely on these places to recharge, to go with our families, to recreate. As Alistair was describing, you know, there's the cultural importance and the spiritual importance. You know, whether you're a hiker or a climber, whether you hunt or fish, whatever it is that you do out there, you know, these places hold great meaning and are so important to so many people. And it reflects in, you know, the numbers of people who support protected public lands. You know, it's very high. It's, you know, in the 80% and 90%. Every poll that you read out there or see out there, you know, 80% to 90% of people say they love public lands. These are our national treasures. You know, our national monuments, our national parks, places like Yosemite and Yellowstone, and our wilderness areas. And Bears Ears became a part of that that vision. But again, with the really unique leadership of tribes. And we're just humbled that we were able to help provide our voices to that as well and channel some of our energy as an activist company and a part of the outdoor industry to support that effort.
Hans Kohl is Director of Campaigns and Advocacy for Patagonia, one of the plaintiffs against the repeal of the Bears Ears Monument. We're also joined today by Alistair Lee Bitsui, Communications Coordinator for Utah Dene Bekea, which means People's Sacred Lands in the Navajo language. Today we are talking about the Bears Ears National Monument. In December, the Trump administration said it would reduce the Bears Ears National Monument by a whopping 85%. So it would go from about 1.3 million acres down to just 200,000. And that announcement sparked an immediate reaction by Native tribes, conservationists, environmental organizations. Patagonia got together very quickly, got their legal team together very quickly to file a lawsuit. They're saying that the Antiquities Act does not give the administration the power to reduce national monuments. And if you'd like to join us, if you've been to Bears Ears, if you've been lucky enough to go to this beautiful place, what was the experience like for you? What does it look like? How did it feel? And if you went after it became a national monument, according to reports, and I'll ask our guests this, tourism has skyrocketed, and officials say there needs to be a plan in place to manage visitation because there are major threats to the area's archaeological treasures. So what changes have you seen, if you're very familiar with the land? What are your thoughts about the Trump administration really going after public lands? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Hans, according to the Salt Lake Tribune and many other reports, after Bears Ears became a national monument, tourism just really took off. And you know, you've written about this. What happens when too many humans go to these places?
Well, I think, you know, certainly it's possible to love a place so much and to visit it so much that you have an impact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as population grows and as all of the development across the country increases, it's absolutely something we need to think about for every place out there that we want to see protected and where there's a natural resource or a cultural resource that is sensitive, that, you know, could be trampled literally or could be, you know, even more negative impacts like looting or vandalism. You know, it's really possible. I think that the important thing to do is to realize that through processes like creating a national monument, it sets something in motion where a management plan can be created that will address that type of visitation, that will address the increased interest. And frankly, you know, even without the establishment of the National Monument, Bears Ears was seeing that impact already. You know, places were getting, again, looted and vandalized. There was too much visitation in certain areas. Folks just weren't visiting with, you know, the education they needed, too, to understand the sensitivity of that cultural landscape. So a national monument and a management plan that comes with a national monument is really an antidote for that. And to see the leadership come from, again, the tribes on that, so that we understand the sensitivity of the cultural artifacts and the living landscape that exists out there, but also to be able to communicate to the climbing community and to have climbers themselves advocating for careful and, you know, thoughtful visitation of the place. And, you know, that's what we need going forward.
Alistair, what would you add? There are some amazing videos online about Bears Ears, but it also includes information about human impact, like damaging petroglyphs, looting, what happens when off-road vehicles come in and, you know, they're cutting down trees. What would you add, and what would you say about the importance of really preserving this land at a time when so many people want to visit, and unfortunately, some people, for whatever reason, decide to vandalize petroglyphs?
Thank you. In addition to, I wanted to say earlier, besides Patagonia, the five tribes are also have filed suit, so it's not just Patagonia that is in suit against Trump. It's also the Hopi, the Navajo, and the Ute Mountain Ute, Zuni, and Hopi, and they're also in suit against the reduction of the Trump proclamation of reducing Bears Ears into two smaller units known as the Indian Creek and Shuscha units of Bears Ears. And like Han mentioned, highlighted, those are the reasons why the tribes and Ute Dinepikea decided to put up this monument status. Historically, tribes have never been part of any land management whatsoever. And, I mean, they already do that naturally within their communities. But when it comes to public lands where they have access, and they felt that exercising their own sovereignty as federally recognized tribes, mm-hmm. they can exercise or leverage some of their power to elevate themselves at the same level as these federal agencies who are basically planning, this is how public lands will work from our perspective. It never always included like tribal Pueblo native communities. And so through this proposal, through Ute Dinepikea and Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, tribes are elevated at the same status. So they are just also a stakeholder. So this is monumental in that regard. And for all the other reasons you listed, like looting, cultural significance, like rooting, basically are basically forced forms of print on the rocks is very disrespectful. And these tribes know that their language is being erased. And so this is also not language is being erased, but their knowledge is being basically threatened, destroyed by looters who also are basically destroying these sites, but also stealing cultural artifacts for profit. Mm. And so this is by the tribes being involved and being elevating their voice is one way to take control and reclaim this narrative and also exert their sovereignty, but also exert their history. Like, this is their real narrative. And this is our land, our ancestral public lands.
Today, we're joined by Alistair Lee Bitsui. He is with the Utah Dene Bekea, which means People's Sacred Lands in the Navajo language. It's a nonprofit grassroots Native American organization working to heal people and the earth. And they're supporting tribes in managing Bears Ears National Monument in Utah, a site they call the first truly Native American National Monument. We're also joined by Hans Cole, Director of Campaigns and Advocacy for Patagonia, one of the plaintiffs against the repeal of Bears Ears Monument. Five tribes are also suing the Trump administration. Today, we are talking about Bears Ears and efforts to preserve this beautiful expanse of Red Rock Canyons in southern Utah. This is Your Calls One Planet series, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about Bears Ears National Monument. In December, the Trump administration said it would reduce the monument by a whopping 85%. So it would go from 1.3 million acres down to just 200,000. The New York Times reports that as early as last March, an aide to Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah asked a senior Interior Department official to consider shrinking Bears Ears. And you can find that article. It's called Oil Was Central in the Decision to Shrink Bears Ears at yourcallradio.org. And we'll talk about that in just a couple minutes. Today, we're joined by Alistair Lee Bitsui. He's with Utah Dene Bekea, which means People's Sacred Lands in the Navajo language. It's a nonprofit grassroots Native organization working to heal people and the earth. Five tribes are suing the Trump administration over this decision. We're also joined by Hans Cole, Director of Campaigns and Advocacy for Patagonia. They are also suing the Trump administration. Hans, what was your reaction, you and your colleagues' reaction, when the Trump administration announced plans to shrink Bears Ears by a whopping 85% in December?
Well, I think it was nothing short of outrage. You know, this is absolutely, you know, we're living in unusual times here. it's really quite incredible to think of a president and administration slashing a protected place by that many acres, you know, over a million acres. And also, yeah, Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument at a similar level in another part of Utah. And, you know, I think as we sort of processing our own outrage in that moment, you know, I think that's what led us to want to do everything in our power, everything we could think of, everything we could do in terms of our resources at our fingertips to push back, to, you know, voice that outrage and to mobilize our community to do as much as we could to say, hey, this isn't okay with us. You know, this is a place that has great meaning to us and to many others in this country. And, you know, frankly, the president was ignoring an outcry that had already happened. You know, the previous summer, there was a public comment period that the administration put into place where they collected comments from people across the country. Anybody could write in and say how they felt about our national monuments, about Bears Ears specifically. And close to 3 million people took time out of their daily schedule, out of their busy lives, to write in. You know, this isn't just clicktivism or something like this. This mm-hmm. isn't just, oh, yeah, I think this is nice, or I like it, you know, with a simple click. This is taking time to write, to type out a comment, send it in to this public process. And close to 3 million comments came in, something like 98% of which were in favor of ongoing protection for Bears Ears and also the rest of the national monuments that the Trump administration threatened through its review process in 2017. So we were outraged, but we're not alone. You know, this is an outcry that is happening across the country. It's why we're so mobilized and, you know, why we've, again, decided to do as much as we can to push back.
And Alistair, this is the largest acreage reduction of a national monument we've ever seen. What was your reaction, and what did you hear from, you know, other tribes about the December announcement?
At the time, I mean, I just want to disclaim that I'm working with Utah Dene Bekea as a communications director, and it's only been since February. But when I heard of the announcement, having had the connection to Bears Ears, I was living in Washington, D.C., and so, like, I had I was saddened. I was very it was like a heartbreak at the time when I heard about the news. But I also wasn't surprised because, come on, like, we know it's Trump. we know he's about development, about deregulation. So it also came as no surprise. Mm. And yeah, it is the largest land reduction. But I think historically, also tribes have encountered this in their own histories, having their lands decrease in size and put on reservations. Some tribes not even going back to their own ancestral lands, but some tribes also going back to their own reservation territories. But it wasn't surprising. I mean, after a while, it was heartbreaking. But then at the same time, now that I'm part of UDB, the mission is still to protect the area and restore it, and that's what we're doing. That's our work. That's our focus now. And right now, we have engaged UDB. Utah de Nebekea has engaged at the United Nations. They went to the indigenous. Some of our staffers went to the indigenous forum, the 17th assembly, like 2 weeks ago, to engage with world leaders there. And we did get some public comment on record with a special rapporteur to ask them to put pressure on the Trump administration, as well as the federal agencies, to restore Bears Ears, of course, for several reasons, including ceremonial usages, ancestral lands, and just all the overall healing factor of why Bears Ears should be protected.
We have a Facebook message from Karen who says, Secretary Zinke's efforts to destroy the planet have sadly trumped those of his colleague, Administrator Pruitt, Scott Pruitt of the EPA. But Pruitt receives more public outrage than Mr. Zinke, who seems to fly under the radar. So let's talk about what we know. The New York Times got their hands on internal emails, and back in May, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke took a visit to Bears Ears, and he said that the review of Bears Ears was not related to the potential for energy protection. In fact, he said, we have a pretty good idea of certainly the oil and gas potential, not much. So Bears Ears isn't really about oil and gas. But the New York Times got its hands on internal agency documents showing that last spring, the Department of Interior was focused on the potential for oil and gas exploration at Bears Ears. And then in March of 2017, an aide to Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah asked a senior Interior Department official to consider shrinking Bears Ears. Alistair, what are your thoughts here? Can you tell us what you think about these emails and the internal documents that the New York Times got its hands on? And what is the overall goal of this administration?
Clearly, the Trump administration is all about exploitation of natural resources, natural resources, and reducing or gutting Bears Ears by 85% is just an assault to the tribes. But we're still fighting. Like I said, we're still going to move forward. We're still finding different avenues to put pressure. We're litigating. We're in Utah de Nebekea and through the Bears Ears and the tribal, they're in court suing. And so we're just also reclaiming our narrative. We're reclaiming, and that's my goal now, is to reclaim our native narrative, our native connection. And storytelling is very critical. The human piece is like having to face to those stories that connect to Bears Ears is very important, because it also allows the public to understand and communicate and feel for the people impacted directly by Bears Ears, but also those who love public lands. And that's our goal is to reclaim the narrative, reclaim and elevate tribal voices, regardless of this system, the structural system that is basically, I guess, making these lines reduce. But still, natives also don't see boundaries as well. They'll still go up there.
What did you make of this, Hans? In another email exchange in May, two Bureau of Land Management officials said that the Zinke's chief of staff for policy, Danny McGallinis, phoned to ask for information on a uranium mill in or near the Bears Ears Monument, and the request sought economic data to the extent available. There's a lot of emails being exchanged about uranium mills adjacent to the Bears Ears Monument. What did you make of the emails, Hans?
Absolutely. Well, I think they speak for themselves. I think that the only reason that companies that are interested in resource extraction communicate with the government is because they have an interest in exploring that area, you know, in whether it's in a short or longer term, sometime in the future. And if you look at the maps of this area and where uranium resources lie and where oil and gas sits, and if you look at Grand Staircase and look at coal resources in particular, there is an, you know, and then you look at how the boundaries have been reduced of these national monuments, it's just crystal clear what's going on. You have communication happening between industry and our government, and you have a clear correlation on the ground. And, you know, you have a history of what's going on the ground, too. There's been, you know, a lot of oil and gas development in particular on the eastern side of what, you know, was established as sort of the original Bears Ears National Monument boundaries at the end of 2016. And, you know, these are practices that are absolutely out of sync with and not compatible with protecting the landscape. You can't have oil and gas development or uranium development and still protect those landscapes in the way that we're talking about today. You know, oil and gas development brings roads, it brings noise, it brings, you know, a blight, a visual sort of blight on the landscape. It digs up the ground and the earth, it makes an environmental impact, it impacts cultural resources. You can't expect someone to go out and either enjoy themselves or practice their traditional practices with that in the landscape and have the same experience. It degrades the landscape, and it does so in an almost permanent fashion. You can't go back in and clean that up entirely. It's really a one-time shot. You know, with uranium, I think, you know, you have to look at incredibly long-term impacts on things like water resources, the pollution that can come from uranium mining that certainly the native communities in the area are very familiar with over time, the history of that. You know, this is a human health concern, it's an environmental concern, and these types of extraction are simply incompatible with protecting this place for the greater value that we're talking about today.
So is this correct? In the meantime, the area which was protected is now available for commercial use, including drilling and mining, though there hasn't been any new development?
To my knowledge, you know, the original executive order opened up this region, the places that were not included, you know, once the boundaries were shrunk, within 60 days to new mining claims. And you know, these things take time. You know, if a company is going to go out and exploit a resource, it takes a little bit of time to get the permits and get moving. But the fact of the matter is, as long as those areas are unprotected and are outside of boundaries, then they're open for business. And as Alistair said, you know, this is clearly the goal of, you know, the current administration. They talk about energy dominance as their priority, and they also are willing to even speak publicly about, you know, the president himself said, "Oh, I'm doing this for my friend Orrin Hatch there in Utah." You know, these are things that are being done in a way that doesn't respect the great deal of public process that was involved, the historic nature of what the tribal leadership is bringing, and the vast majority of Americans who don't agree with what's going on.
Alistair, have you seen any changes since February?
To my knowledge, I haven't seen any like new, like a bulldozer or anything like on the land. But as far as I know, I know those public lands near the Bears Ears region were auctioned off back in early March, I believe it was, and those were sold for proposed development. But I haven't seen any development for sure. Of course, we are monitoring that and watching to see how that unfolds. But for tribes like I said, or at least Utah Dene Pekea, we do. It's in our worldview, our knowledge, in which we leave those kind of development alone, and we don't develop that. It's not part of our ideology. It's not part of our ceremonies to like, oh, let's go make a prayer for oil and let's go make money off that. Like, that's not what our worldview is based on. It's about healing. It's about ceremony. It's about protecting Mother Earth, and that's what the tribes are trying to do. They're stewards of this land, of the Mother Earth, and they have they issue ceremonies, they issue blessings on designated spaces on the Bears Ears region, and it's for the betterment of humankind. You know, like it's not, because tribes do it, it's not just for themselves, but it's for all of humanity. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to the oil and gas industry and the proposed uranium, if at all, I mean, we're happy that the market sucks right now for the uranium in development, and that's a positive for us. But like, I know there's still ongoing threats, and that we're on alert, and we do have other partners who work in different aspects of environmental protection that are on the ground there that will fill us in. And yeah, so that's what I have to say in response to your question there.
Mm. Alistair Lee Bitsui is communications coordinator for Utah Dene Bekea, which means people's sacred lands in the Navajo language. Utah Dene Bekea is a nonprofit grassroots native organization working to heal people and the earth. They support tribes in managing Bears Ears National Monument in Utah, 1.3 million acres of really breathtaking Red Rock Canyons in southern Utah. Five tribes are suing the Trump administration over its decision to shrink Bears Ears by a whopping 85%, so it would go down to just 200,000 acres. We're also joined by Hans Kohl, Director of Campaigns and Advocacy for Patagonia. You might know Patagonia as the clothing company, but they do a lot of conservation activism, and they are also suing the Trump administration. If you have any questions or comments, if you've been to Bears Ears, we'd love to hear about your experience, what it means to you. What did you make of not only this decision, but the administration really going after public lands? Federal public lands encompass about 640 million acres across all 50 states. The administration has threatened to remove or reduce protections from 27 national monuments. This is unprecedented. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Hans, you wrote a really incredible lengthy piece full of graphics at the Patagonia website. You could also find it at yourcallradio.org. Why should the public care about public lands? In the piece, you write that to date, states have sold 70% of the public trust lands placed under their control to the highest bidder. Give us a sense of what really happens to the land and the wildlife when land is sold off to the highest bidder.
Well, this is you know, one aspect of the situation we're facing nationwide with our public lands. The history, as you were just indicating, is that when federally controlled public lands are transferred to states, and that's something that the delegation in Utah and other states across the country actually are eager to see happen because they're interested in having control of those lands. But when that happens, the trend, and you mentioned the 70% of those lands tend to be eventually auctioned off. And the reason for that is states need to make money. You know, they have their own budget concerns at whatever the situation might be. Their incentive is not to continue to hold those lands at all in any sort of a trust relationship, but to simply sell them off, to privatize them and to make money on them in that way, to take care of any budget concerns they might have within the state. When that happens, anything can happen on those public lands. It could be because they're no longer public. You know, they've transferred into private ownership. They can be developed. They can, you know, have sort of a typical development, houses or buildings. They could have more resource extraction out there, oil and gas development, or whatever it might be, mining. They essentially move out of the protected sphere and into privately held lands. And we very much oppose that trend. There's been a lot of efforts recently in the past couple of years to stop legislation at the federal level, at the state level, to try to transfer public lands into private ownership. It's sort of the holding the line so that we can actually then later try to protect the most valuable and most sensitive lands out there through things like national monuments or national parks or wilderness. And it's not to say, by the way, that there isn't public land out there in the U.S. that is being, you know, that are being not being used for oil and gas development or for resources or for forestry. Something like 90% of U.S. public lands are open to oil and gas leasing, to resource extraction, and there are ways to, you know, have sustainable forestry happen for us to get the resources we need from the landscape out there to live our lives. But if 90% are open, 10% seems like an awfully small amount to protect for recreation, for culture, for conservation, for wildlife, for people. And, you know, I think we need to keep an eye on that bigger picture of public lands across the country when we think about how we balance what we're doing in terms of taking resources versus protecting.
Mm. Alistair, what would you add?
Yeah, I would add too, like can you repeat the question?
Yes, we were just talking about what happens when public land is given to the highest bidder. What happens to the land? I mean, because it's not just ears. We're talking about public lands really across the country under this administration.
Well, it's clear that they're going to develop it. They're going to sell it. I mean, Hans definitely talked about how it's the mindset of the president of the United States to be the world power, and he'll basically try to do whatever he can to be that power. And in the case of Bears Ears, or Native Americans and Bears Ears and other people around the region, I mean, of course, it's another example of just exploitation and at the expense of a vulnerable community or vulnerable communities around the Bears Ears region. And we did talk about uranium and the impacts of that. Like in oil and gas, there's the Aneth Extension on Navajo territory that currently has health impacts there with local residents there. And also there's the history of uranium, the legacy of uranium in and around tribal lands. That is the legacy waste is still there. And so obviously when it comes to public lands, it's at this point under the Trump administration, it seems to be it's not a good thing for us.
We have about 5 minutes left. Alistair, can you talk about the significance of this lawsuit? Five tribes suing the administration, saying the Antiquities Act does not give it the power to reduce national monuments.
Yeah, I think this is where the legal counsel would probably be able to confidently talk about that. I don't want to go veer into that because I know there's language in the proclamation or things that are sensitive that I don't want to, like, that would work against us. So I'll defer on that comment. But I'll definitely add before that, since we have 5 minutes left, that the Bears Ears region is just significant for many various reasons. And I know for at least for Navajo, the Diné people, it is the Treaty of 1868, so it is 150 years since we signed a legal agreement with the United States. And I bring that up because the Bears Ears region was a hiding place for some Diné people that were not captured, that didn't go on that force march to Fort Sumner, New Mexico. So that's just another element, another history that is not written or that's not known. And I feel that there's many factors, environmental, human, native, that explain or justify why this Bears Ears region needs to be protected. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what I have to offer at this point.
No, thank you. That history is so, so important. I mean, that history should be at Bears Ears when people visit. And unfortunately, so much of Native history is not at these places across the country. Hans, what would you say about the significance of this lawsuit?
Well, like Alistair, I'm not a lawyer, so I'll say something sort of at a higher level, which is, you know, this is part of our right as citizens to speak out when we think our government is on the wrong path. And there's a lot of ways to do this. Legal means are one way. And I'm glad that we're in a country where we can bring a suit against our president, against the administration for actions that, you know, many legal scholars are saying are illegal. And it's, you know, one of many things that we need to do. We need to support grassroots groups like Utah Dene Bekea that are working on the ground, organizing and communicating about the power and importance of the landscape. We need to talk to our members of Congress. We need to call them up as soon as possible this week, if you can, listeners, and tell them how much you love your protected public lands and that we don't want our national monuments slashed. And we need to work together in coalitions and work together across communities to speak as loudly as we can for the protection of places and to elevate the narratives like the narrative that Alistair has been talking about from tribal communities. Elevate that so that people can understand the power and importance of what's happening here. It's absolutely historic. It's inspiring what happened with the protection of this place. And it's sad and outrageous what our current administration is doing to that historic moment. So we got to fight back. And thankfully, we live in a democracy that allows us to do so in lots of different ways.
Hans Kohl is Director of Campaigns and Advocacy for Patagonia. It is a clothing company, and also they file lawsuits, raise a lot of money to protect the environment. They are suing the Trump administration over the decision to drastically shrink the Bears Ears Monument. Hans, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Hello.
Appreciate it.
Hi.
And
Alistair? Yeah, sorry, really quickly.
We have about 20 seconds.
I forgot to issue an action item.
Okay, we have 20 seconds.
Don't forget to contact your congressional leaders. There is a Curtis bill. We want that to be killed. So it's H.R. 4532. Definitely lobby your congressmen and women to defeat that bill.
Alistair Lee Bitsui is with Utah Dene Bekea, which means People's Sacred Lands in the Navajo language. They're a nonprofit grassroots native organization working to heal people and the earth, supporting tribes to manage Bears Ears National Monument. Alistair, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.